Hi, everyone. I'm Frieza Bastoon.
And I'm Kay Jabelli, and this is Monopoly Attack. Today, we're talking about the biggest gaming acquisition in history, which comes on the tail end of a period of consolidation and could have significant repercussions on the global gaming market.
If you've been on Twitter lately, you've probably heard of it. We're talking, of course, about the New York Times acquisition of Wordle.
And perhaps we can discuss a few other smaller acquisitions that came up recently as well.
Right. I think I heard something about, was it Microsoft, Activision, Blizzard? We'll see if we can get to that. But maybe let's start with a little primer on this games market, because the games market remains obscure to a lot of people, but it is hugely important. In 2021, it accounted for about $180 billion in revenues. That is a lot. Just to put that into perspective, that is more than twice as much as the box office, so Hollywood movies and recorded music combined. And the way the game market works, you sort of have to look at three of its segments. We've got mobile gaming, the apps you use on your phone, PC gaming, that's sort of the stereotypical traditional form of gaming, and then console gaming, well, which might even be older. And we've got significant players in each of those markets, but the players differ a bit depending on who makes the games. So that's the development of games, often done by small studios, and the publishing of games, bringing it to market. And then there's those that distribute the games. And there's this old saying in content industries or entertainment industries, content is king. But I think in gaming, it's more like distribution is king, because that's, if you want to be a real big player in gaming, you have to distribute games, not only develop them. Mobile gaming is distributed by mainly two companies, Apple through its App Store and Google through its Play Store. PC gaming is a bit more competitive in line with the open platform nature of the PC. You got the Microsoft Game Store, Epic has a game store, or you can just download games from the web. And finally, on consoles, of course, we have the PlayStation from Sony that has its own store, and then the Xbox owned by Microsoft, which also comes with its own stores. And all these companies I've just mentioned also develop games, but the game development market is a lot more competitive. And finally, if you want to know how the gaming market that $180 billion of revenue is divided, you might be surprised to hear that mobile gaming is by far the largest segment of this market, accounting for about half of it. This sounds surprising. I mean, hardcore games are mostly situated on PCs and consoles, but apparently moms playing Candy Crush is where the real money is. So I think that's a short primer, Kay. Do you have anything to add to that, maybe on the more recent developments in gaming?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of innovation happening right now in terms of the distribution being king. There's a different approach that's kind of bubbling up with these cloud streaming gaming services. So rather than having a console that is playing the game, processing it, and showing the graphics and taking the inputs and everything for the interactive game on the edge, in that console or device, that all that processing is done somewhere else and the game is just streamed to that device. So the device can just be a screen, it can be a phone, it can be just a very low powered device. It doesn't have to do the graphic processing itself, but still gets the benefit of that super high quality graphics, which are actually just being processed somewhere on a server in a cloud. So you're seeing these cloud gaming services coming in and using this streaming distribution model. Now, there are some debates around how is that going to be done. Do you need that to be sort of is it like a Netflix model where you have to get a subscription? But there is some change happening on the technology and the distribution side as well.
Yeah, good point. I think Microsoft has its xCloud product. There's others like NVIDIA's GeForce Now. I think another development we're mentioning is cross-platform play, sort of the boundaries between these different segments breaking down a bit with games like Fortnite, a big publisher that sort of convinced console makers, PC, well, OS owners and mobile developers or mobile platform owners all to have their game interact between platforms. So you can be playing on mobile, but with people that are playing it on their console, for example. That sort of breaks down some of the barriers that have existed.
Yeah, and I think that kind of depends on what kind of game you're talking about. So games that get a lot of value from those network effects where there's a lot of creator content like Minecraft or Roblox, which is also another very, very big game. Billions in market cap for the company, tons of users, game within a game. Some have said, you can tell I have a younger cousin who plays it. Those kind of games especially benefit from being able to be cross-platform, because a large part of the value that's for users, for the players, is being able to play with your friends regardless of what console they play on. Then there, you know, there's the other games that are maybe more story-driven that then get a little bit more of a benefit from being on a platform exclusively, perhaps.
Maybe if the platform owner is giving them some benefits for being exclusive, and otherwise, if you really want that game, you're going to have to get that platform. So the classic example of this is Nintendo. If you want to play Mario, you have to get a Nintendo, and that's able to let them monetize through the hardware sales a lot easier.
Mm. Right. And all of this has sort of made their way into antitrust decisions already. The European Commission has looked at some previous acquisitions, for example, Microsoft acquiring ZeniMax. They're sort of not committing to any market definition, not being able to say whether mobile, PC, and console are really different markets or not. In Epic's case against Apple, this came up as well, and the judgment there still separated those segments, but said that they're kind of breaking down. They might become a more unified market in the future if these cloud gaming developments, cross-platform play, keep breaking true. So it's very much a market that is moving. But let's maybe get to this, the most important transaction in recent memory, the New York Times buying Wordle.
You've probably seen these squares on your Twitter timeline if you're active there, green and gray and yellow, and some numbers next to them, because every day there's a new Wordle that comes out, apparently. I don't play it myself. You should tell us more about it.
Yeah. I mean, I am obsessed with the game. It's the first thing I do in the morning. You only get to play once every 24 hours, which is sort of a good like anti-virality or at least anti-obsession stop. You get a word, five letters, and you put in your tries, and they tell you which letters are correct, which letters are correct but not in that spot, and you get six tries to find the right words. So far, I haven't failed, but that's the fear that's driving me these days. So after becoming a great success, this game was acquired by New York Times for a low seven-figure amount, I think. So a couple of million, that is.
That's pretty crazy. I mean, as I understand it, Wordle itself isn't really a innovative game. I think I've seen that game like on game shows or at least, you know, the number versions of it. So it's not that the game concept itself is particularly different, but I think the fact that they're able to use the Twitter's sharing function by using those square emojis to distinguish sort of how you did that day, that has generated a lot of buzz. And, you know, it's a relatively simple word-based game. Word-based games are pretty popular. And New York Times is one of the big players in word-based games. They have their crossword app. I mean, they have a whole separate subscription to the crossword. I was surprised myself. I didn't realize that crosswords were such a big deal. But yeah, apparently some people will subscribe just to get daily crosswords from New York Times.
Yeah, they're definitely somewhat of a player in that segment of games, word games. I mean, everything about this story is just amazing. The guy creating Wordle is called Josh Wardle. He made it for his girlfriend.
is that for real?
That is for real.
It's perfect.
And there's a whole story there about digital distribution as well, because, I mean, this is a web-based game, right? You just navigate to a website, and through the cookies, like, you can maintain your scores and see sort of your stats as long as you don't remove those cookies. I mean, that's one great use of cookies. Now, I guess the success was becoming a bit much. I'm wondering what he paid in fees just to keep this website up and running. But I guess, most of all, he had some trouble with copycats. Like, the day after this gotten some success, already copycats were up in the App Store. Finally, Apple removed them, but this started a whole debate about App Store curation. Because, of course, if you read Apple's policies, they don't allow copycats. I guess that might have all been a bit much to handle for Wordle. So the acquisition option seemed interesting, but you might want to think a bit about the competitive landscape, even with such a pretty small acquisition. I guess if you consider this market quite limited, as in word games, that might have some impact. And also thinking about the plans with this With the acquisition came an announcement by the New York Times saying that the...
Yeah, what do you think, Friso? Is this a killer acquisition?
Yeah, that's a big word, right? Well, difficult to say.
So what is a killer acquisition for our audience, maybe if they're not familiar?
Yeah, I think we've talked about this a bit, but haven't done an episode on this. So killer acquisition is basically taking another product or service off the market in favor of your own service. So to preempt competition with your own products or services. So that's at least the original term.
And so in this situation, Wordle could be a competitor to the word-based games of New York Times?
Yeah, the crosswords, etc. So at least...
It's free?
It is free.
Doesn't require a subscription, and every day you get a new game?
Yeah, pretty good deal so far. So there's a fear that the New York Times might make it part of its paid program, which, I mean, would take it off the market in some sense. I don't think they'll kill the game, as in they'll destroy the mechanics just in favor of its crossword. They'll probably just add it to the bundle. I guess that's a dynamic we often see in digital markets as well. You acquire a company not to destroy it, but just to add it to your ecosystem. So I feel like that is what they're probably going with here.
And I think they did mention that the game would initially remain free to new and existing players, which that word initially remain free is kind of an indicator of where things are headed.
Yeah, it's a bit ominous.
Sorry, Friso, you're going to have to start paying a subscription to New York Times, it seems.
Oh, gosh. And you said it's a separate subscription even. Like, I'm already subscribing to the newspaper, but I don't know if I want to pay for crosswords.
Oh, well, I mean, that is a pretty big deal, I think. And I think a lot of people on Twitter have commented on it. But there's also another big deal that happened, a very big deal, if you look at the numbers, $70 billion almost. Microsoft's acquisition of Activision Blizzard. Now, Activision Blizzard itself...
That's a tongue twister.
That is a bit of a tongue twister, yeah. Activision Blizzard itself is sort of a combination of Activision and Blizzard. I was growing up a big fan of Blizzard. I played Warcraft and Starcraft as a young man.
Oh.
And yeah, so there has been a lot of consolidation. I mean, Microsoft itself, they bought Minecraft not so long ago. That was a pretty big billion in the billions big acquisition. But now, I mean, with this one, Microsoft owns tons of games. Minecraft, Call of Duty, World of Warcraft, Diablo, Doom, Wolfenstein, Fallout, Skyrim. And with Activision, they also get this real entry point into mobile, Candy Crush, which is one of the biggest mobile games. And it's an area where they haven't really had a lot of success in the past. They've shut down last year Minecraft Earth, which was a real-world game similar to Pokemon Go. And they're also closing down this other popular game, Forza Street. Maybe not the mobile version of it isn't so popular, but I'm familiar with that brand. So this gives them, in this future where, as you said, half of the gaming revenue is coming from mobile, it gives them quite a nice point of leverage in that ecosystem.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I have to add one more game to your list, which is Tony Hawk Pro Skater. That's the game I grew up playing, made by Activision. Amazing. And now also part of Microsoft's portfolio. So it's worth thinking a bit about the direction that this whole gaming industry is going with increasing consolidation. I mean, I think for one, consolidation begets consolidation. So we might be seeing more and more of these acquisitions. But I guess the first question is, what's the sort of strategic play here by Microsoft? I think an important one is their Game Pass service. So that's a gaming subscription. I think it's €15 per month for sort of an unlimited gaming experience. They also have a cloud version of that. So trying to become sort of the Netflix of games. They also have some trouble with that because on mobile, at least, the App Store policies prevent you from sort of providing one app with access to all games. You need to submit games separately. So that's tying into their battle with Apple, but maybe we can come back to that. I think boosting their subscription product is perhaps the biggest one. What are you seeing?
Yeah, this way they can immediately just add more content into it because now they own the content. They don't have to worry about annual licensing fees or negotiations with the content supplier. It's their content. So they can immediately boost the attractiveness of that Game mm-hmm. Pass for their customers.
Yeah, definitely. And then if you read the announcement, one buzzword sort of took everyone's attention, which is, of course, the metaverse. I feel like as a tech company, if you do anything these days, you have to mention the metaverse just to keep your stock price up, I guess. But let's try and look beyond the buzzword and consider this seriously, how do you think this plays into Microsoft's metaverse ambitions? What is the metaverse in the first place?
That's the thing. It's a good question. And if you look at what people talk about the metaverse, a persistent virtual world that you can spend your time in, own digital goods, this has been happening. I mean, World of Warcraft, you've got millions of players who are spending money on digital goods there. They're paying an annual or monthly subscription to be part of that. It's a 3D world. And so there's a lot of similarity and overlap between gaming and with this concept of metaverse. Now, there was also Facebook's announcement that they're going to be hiring 10,000 engineers and programmers in Europe. And we're saying primarily people with gaming experience. And there's a lot of those people in Europe because that's where the spillover, the crossover is. That's where that talent for the metaverse is going to come from, where they have that experience. So it could be, and Microsoft is well-placed. They have the hardware, they've not only the console hardware, but the sensors. Xbox had that camera, the Xbox Eye back in the day, and imagine those technologies have advanced a lot. They have their HoloLens, I think it's called, and there's a lot of other stuff that they're working on in that space that overlaps. So they're well-placed to be a big metaverse company, even though they don't make a lot of noise about it. They haven't changed their name to reflect this, but it's very part and parcel to what they've been doing for a very long time.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think it makes some sense. Like, if you think about the metaverse as indeed this persistent online world, well, those already exist, but they're just called gaming right now. Like Roblox and Fortnite are offer not only games, but they host concerts. You can watch movies there. I think it'll be interesting to see this develop because it's very much early days. Also interesting to note that this metaverse concept comes from science fiction and mostly dystopian science fiction, where people go to the metaverse to escape the terrible reality of the real world. I think the term was first used in Snow Crash by Neal Stephenson. After that, you might have seen Ready Player One, which has its own dystopian metaverse. So let's hope it doesn't go that way. We'll see. Will every platform like Microsoft, like Facebook, have their own little metaverse? And will this be adjacent metaverses, or will they all interoperate, which I think is necessary for a real metaverse where everyone can interact with everyone. And I think Facebook at least has sort of committed to there being one metaverse, not only the Facebook metaverse, but I think that will require huge development costs and efforts. So I guess hiring all those software developers is a good start, but we'll have to see where it goes.
It also has some interesting implications strategically for Microsoft, right? So yes, the metaverse play forward-looking, but what about the existing, yes, also increasing their streaming and making that, that's also kind of a future thing. There's already a lot of existing platform-to-platform competition in gaming, so potentially they could try to impose some exclusivity, not share their content anymore with Sony. And it does kind of put them a little bit into conflict with Apple and Google, with the King, which is part of Activision, with the Candy Crush. This sort of access to app stores in the past, Microsoft has kind of indirectly been needling the mobile companies after having its own failures in mobile. But now they have a very profitable app developer who would benefit from sideloading, from not having to pay Apple or Google as much in terms of app store fees. So I guess we'll have to wait and see how that also plays out in terms of their positioning.
Yeah, that's, I think, an interesting aspect. It puts like these big tech companies in more of an adverse position to each other. Like Microsoft was never a fan of the app stores of Apple and Google, but now they're more financially sort of harmed. They have a bigger financial stake in that those commission fees that are levied by Apple and Google, generally 30% on games or in-game purchases. So we'll see where they take more active role. I think there's already signs of that with them sort of testifying in other cases, but they might want to take that up a notch after this acquisition.
Which also kind of could be counterproductive, because if the metaverse is this whole thing that then Microsoft gets a big share of, then they won't be able to charge the 30% that they currently charge on like the Xbox store, right? So
yeah, they should be careful with that. Or I mean, perhaps that would be a good altogether conclusion of both the metaverse being open and some of the other mobile ecosystems still existing being more open. But yeah, there definitely will have to be some consistency in our messaging there.
But that's not the only acquisition this week. So we had the big Wordle one. We had the Activision one. There's also a follow-on one after Microsoft announced that it was acquiring Activision Blizzard. Sony announced that it was going to acquire Bungie, which is the original creator of Halo, and the current big title that they have is called Destiny. A smaller transaction. It's a little over $3.5 billion compared to the 20 times the size, the Microsoft acquisition, which was 20 times that size. But it shows that there is still efforts to match the competition, as you were saying. It shows that in this space, there is a lot of platform-to-platform competition to keep in mind. And it also brings an interesting angle from a merger control perspective, doesn't it?
Right, absolutely. I mean, in different ways. But if you look back historically, these exclusive games have been a huge part of the way gaming has developed. You mentioned Nintendo earlier, even before that Sega, and now with PlayStation and Xbox, trying to get control over these, I guess, strategic inputs, especially sort of the games that might even qualify as must-have games. With this acquisition, Microsoft gets access to Call of Duty. You could wonder whether Dell would draw that. There seems to be a race to get exclusive content, or at least content, and then the question is whether they will make that exclusive. And I think that will be sort of the main focus of any antitrust investigations here. I think obviously they'll have to get this merger approved in the EU, and input foreclosure might be the main theory of harm there. And as Microsoft enters in these acquisitions, others like Sony may just have to follow up. That's this consolidation creep. What other interesting aspects?
It's not just in gaming. There was also consolidation in all media. I mean, Disney acquiring Marvel and Lucas and Pixar and everything. There's a lot of sort of, like you said, content is king, and people are realizing that if you want to get users, you want to get them into your ecosystem, you need to have some value proposition, which is something that Nintendo has done for a very long time very well. But yeah, that continues to play out, and it'll be interesting to see how the commission analyzes it. But in analyzing it, in determining whether this is raising competition concerns, they have to take into account the counterfactual. What would the world look like absent the transaction? And then there's a little interesting timing issue now here because of these two being announced, one shortly after another. Could you tell me a little bit more about that?
Oh, I mean, I think with the specifics of getting these mergers approved, or at least going to the commission to get them approved, you're in a better position to take us into that process.
So the thing is, when you go in to notify a merger, there's this counterfactual question of what would competition look like absent the merger. When there are multiple acquisitions happening in the industry at the same time, the authority will do a kind of a first in principle. So whoever gets to notify first and formally submit the request for approval of the merger, and that doesn't mean the first one to first contact the commission, because there's a whole pre-notification process, but it'll mean ultimately the first one who gets the green light, at least in the EU from the European Commission to do it, then they will consider the situation as it was at the time of notification. So this means that if Microsoft notifies first, then the authority will consider the market without Sony and Bungie being consolidated. But if Sony and Bungie go first, then it will be without Microsoft and Activision being consolidated. So that kind of creates an interesting situation where I think if Sony goes first, they're a little bit of an advantage, because for one, whenever there's consolidation in an industry, the next deal that would further consolidate the industry gets a little bit more difficult and a little bit more difficult, and depending on how much of a consolidation is. And in this one, Microsoft and Activision, it's a huge combination in terms of gaming. So strategically, if Sony gets there first, it could be a little bit more troublesome for Microsoft.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, to get into specifics of that, I think I could see this ending with some commitments on the side of Microsoft, perhaps. I mean, the CEO of Microsoft's gaming division has already said that it wouldn't pull important games like Call of Duty from, for example, Sony's PlayStation. Maybe the commission would want to get that in writing rather than just orally. I also think that there's really difficult balance that the commission will have to tread between, as you said, competition between platforms and within platforms. Obviously, if you make a game exclusive, there will be less competition within that platform or within other platforms, but the platforms themselves keep competing. So what's the right balance there? Yes, that will be another difficult part. I think a last sort of theory of harm that I've heard mentioning was Microsoft not sort of becoming the Netflix of gaming, but rather the Amazon of gaming, just consolidating a lot of different titles of games, putting them into this xCloud or Game Pass subscription, and offering that below price for some time to drive out competitors. What do you think about that theory?
It's an interesting theory. I think having lower prices is generally good for consumers. So it depends on if that would really mean a way to exclude long-term competition and that resulting in harm to consumers, lower quality, less innovation, higher prices. In gaming, at least to date, there has been kind of a cyclical competition for the market for new console releases. So it could be disadvantageous and there could be, a new opportunity to compete on the new wave of consoles. And then at the same time, we had talked about a little bit about this cloud stuff. So on the horizons, you have these new entrants and new possibilities coming in. So maybe the market is relatively competitive and maybe different minds could disagree as to the results, which is also something to consider, right? Because you're going to have a couple of different competition authorities looking at this probably. And, we talked about it last episode. Some competition authorities are a bit more interventionist than others. So we might have different sets of remedies being imposed. We might have different conclusions on the different theories of harm. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out.
Yeah. On that point, I think we talked about Facebook Giphy, of course, being prohibited by the UK Competition Authority. But just today or yesterday, the Austrian Competition Authority did approve the merger. So I think those kinds of diverging decisions will become more and more part and parcel of competition enforcement, which is, of course, not ideal from a business perspective.
Except for our business, where we get to comment on it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, okay. Well, this has been a great discussion. Anything you wanted to add still?
Yeah, so thanks everyone for tuning in and keep following us on Twitter, Monopoly Attack, and we look forward to discussing with you in the future.
Catch you next time, Kate.
See ya, Frizo.